privilege it is to be with you all this morning. I don't know if we can tee up the video just while I'm introing. That would be good. So my name's Neil. I'm partnership manager at Barnabas. Been around Barnabas for over 13 years, and Barnabas has been going for over 30 years. And little fun fact for you. Mount Chapel has a big part in my history, well, my family's history, because my in-laws were students at Salford back in the early 70s, and they actually met here at Mount Chapel. Isn't that cool? So that's so I have a fond affiliation with you guys, which is really nice. So I don't know whether you know much about Barnabas, but we are going to just journey into that this morning. As I say, I've got a little video here that shows you some of the images around the charity. We were started 30 years ago by Peter and Beryl Green, and the first resource we had was a bus, which is why we're called Barnabas. If you notice, we are misspelt for a reason. Bus provided medical care, food and clothing for people who were homeless and rough sleeping in Manchester City Centre. And those three things we still do to this day, but we now have a building, so we have a bus. We haven't had a bus for a long time. We have a building called The Beacon, which is on Bloom Street in Manchester City Centre, where Paul came and met me a few months ago. And from that place, as I say, we do the medical care, we do food, we do clothing, but actually we can do showers now. We have a support team that take people on this journey, and we're going to talk about this journey quite a lot this morning, off the streets. We might first meet them with a sleeping bag in a doorway, rough sleeping in Manchester, and then we want to take them through temporary and supported accommodation and on into a place to call their own home and to leave homelessness behind. And that's really what we're all about. So this little video, we did this a couple of years ago to mark our 30th anniversary. Bittersweet thing to say. We don't want to be around, and to be around for 30 years, it's not necessarily something we want to celebrate, but we do want to mark that. So on here, some lots of images of us over the years. So if you want to play that, that'd be great. So that just gives you a little some of the points of our journey. So in there was a furniture upcycling project that we used to have that was down at the Message. We don't have that anymore. We handed that over to another charity just before COVID, which I think was the Lord, because we didn't know COVID was coming, but it wouldn't have worked during COVID. But in there as well, you can see some of our shots of our sports centre, the fact that we take people off the streets and on into that lifelong journey away from homelessness. Just to give you some idea about what we've been up to, if you want to pop up the slides, we're busy, unfortunately, I suppose is probably the thing often that I have to say. This last year, we served 865 different people. Now, they might come to us multiple times, you know, during the time that we're working with them. Some people come 2-3 times. Some people come every week, every day, for a whole year. And if you like, that's the bad news of the situation in Manchester. We are focused on people who are rough sleeping. So we don't necessarily work with everybody who's in homelessness, because homelessness is more than rough sleeping. Rough sleeping is the visible end of homelessness. We would define homelessness as anybody who's experiencing the situation where they haven't got a safe place to call their own home, and therefore they're homeless. Now, that can look like somebody who's sofa surfing, staying with family, staying in temporary accommodation. They're still homeless, but they might have a roof over their head, but they're homeless. But people who are rough sleeping, obviously, are the ones that we I'm talking about here, are people who are out on the streets and hit that crisis point. They haven't got anywhere, a roof over their heads. And so out of that 865 people, the majority of those would have first come to us in that situation with a sleeping bag, or I've just been kicked out of somewhere. So if you like, that's the bad news. And over half of them were new to us. So that's how the problem is growing. And these are figures from last financial year. In the last few months, the numbers have again risen by another 50%. So we're seeing demand increase at a rapid rate. But the good news is most of the people that we now see are getting some form of help. So 720 had some form of help to help them get off the streets. That won't necessarily be a bed that night because there aren't enough. And that's one of the major issues in the city. There's not enough temporary accommodation for the people who are becoming homeless. But what we can do is we can help them with, you know, a referral to another service, seeing our nurse, accessing NHS medical care, which they can do through our centre, seeing our the NHS mental health team, through getting a bank account, getting the benefits centre set up, all the bits and pieces along the journey to eventually getting off the streets. So that's what 720 is, which is over 90% of the people that we work with, which is amazing, really. Pre-COVID, we actually used to serve more people to our centre, but we had less time for them. And actually, the majority of the people that came to our centre didn't get the help that we wanted to give them. So we actually narrowed our work down to the most people most in crisis, the people who didn't get help anywhere else. The Lord challenged us before, it was at the end of 2019, to go after the hardest to reach people, the people who other services couldn't help or there wasn't the right help for. And that's what these numbers now reflect. Even though we're still busy, and 865 is way more than we anticipated when we made that change, but the fact that we can help most people is really good news. And then what we do is, the other end of our journey, so the front end is our Beacon Support Centre with people who are rough sleeping. The end, if you like, of our journey is people on our resettlement scheme, where they get their own place to call home. So we have private landlords that we work with who provide us with properties that we can put people in. A lot of landlords don't like people on benefits, don't like people coming out of homelessness, but because we're involved, they will take them because they know there's a support network behind them. If it goes wrong, we're there to pick up the pieces. We make sure that their benefits get paid to the landlord and not to the tenant. All those little things that are actually issues for most landlords, we step into. So at the moment, we have 30 people who are on that scheme. It's been running for over 6 years, and 80% of the people who've been through that scheme have maintained their tenancy and not gone back to homelessness, which for us is amazing, absolutely amazing. And that piece of our work is the bit that breaks what I call the cycle of homelessness. We see it a lot. People come to our centre, get a bit of help, get off the streets, something goes wrong, and they end up coming back on the streets. They lose their property, and then back knocking on our door for help again. So our resettlement scheme is all about stopping that and actually moving people past that and on into the future. So this is the journey that we take people on. So we start, what I said, with support. So as you see there, there's somebody in a sleeping bag in a doorway. Your atypical thought, I'm guessing, when we say homelessness, you'd think somebody rough sleeping. And they come to our support centre. There's a little picture of it there in the middle. It's not very big, but we provide in there, our engagement team will start that journey. Somebody walks through the door that's new to us. We're going to find out what's the situation, why have they hit the streets, what's their mental health needs, are they in addiction, do they need support to get back to somewhere else, or do they need support in Manchester? Have they made a homeless assessment with the council? And that's the first question that we ask everybody, because that's the key that can unlock either help direct from the council, or if the council says no, we can step in. So that all happens in our support centre, and as I say, we have all sorts going on in there. Then what we call progression. So those people that we do house, we do get them into somewhere. So that might be a temporary bed, might be a hostel type situation. At the moment, if you are homeless in Manchester, you get an off the street, a rough sleeper homeless in Manchester, you get an off the street offer to go to ETROP, which is a hotel down by the airport, and that is run by Manchester City Council, and then from there they can move you on into other accommodations. So we work with their outreach team to make that happen. And then those who are in that temporary accommodation, we will walk with them, with our caseworkers, through this progression stage. And we're looking in that piece of the journey for people who are doing really well, those who are shining, those who we believe are tenancy ready. And once we do find those people, and it's a small percentage of those people, we can then move them into the sustained part of what we do, which is our resettlement scheme. And that's where they can have their own place. And we put them in a flat or a shared house, and they have their own tenancy. And we continue to support them. We know that putting a roof over somebody's head is not the solution to homelessness. From our perspective, homelessness, certainly in the UK, is a heart issue. For most of the people we're dealing with, they've been through trauma, they've been abused, they've had horrific circumstances in their childhood, in their teens and into early adult life. That means they are usually self-medicating with some form of substance. They have got real bad mental health issues caused by that trauma. So to just pick them up, pluck them off the street and put them in a room does not fix their homelessness, because most of those people will end up going back on the streets. We've had people we've housed and they've got a lovely bed and they can't sleep in it. They sleep on the floor because they got so used to sleeping on the floor. We have other people who are so traumatized by the idea of being inside in four walls that they will choose, even though they have a front door and they have a room, to come back out on the streets. And choose, that's probably the wrong word. It's part of their mental health issue. So we work with people to make sure that doesn't happen. So we have resettlement workers who will make sure they're filling their week with good things, volunteering, training, getting connected with their families. And then we have local churches, of which you could be one, that's what we're talking to you today, who have volunteers who will then come around those people to make sure that they're doing well. Maybe go for a coffee, maybe go out and watch a movie with them. Creating healthy community out where they are now living, rather than feel the need to come back into the Manchester City Centre and all the old temptations and all the old bad habits that are there. Because there is a sense of community on the streets, we have to acknowledge that. It isn't a healthy community, but it is a sense of community. So we want to create healthy community and actually give them a chance to do well and to sustain that front door, that place to call home. And in that stage of what we do, we see people, like I say, reconnect with families. We have had some Barnabas babies in that stage as well, which is really exciting. A couple of young women who were, one lady, she was in a tent, crack addict, absolute mess of her life. And she, her life turned around to such a degree that when she was in this stage, she got her own place, she found a partner, had a baby together, and there's now a family unit that would never have existed without the intervention of our team, which is amazing. And we have some traffic wardens. Who'd have thought this? One of the big things that some of our guys get a job in is traffic wardens. So a couple of years ago, we started a little program with the traffic warden service, and the first two guys who went on that scheme are now training people who are joining the scheme, which is amazing. We've got six people who've gone through this program, through this journey, and are now traffic wardens. I wouldn't have put that together, but it works. And this is all this other stuff that goes on throughout the life of Barnabas in our support centre. So we have offer haircuts. We want dignity for the people that are coming into the centre. That's our nurse, Liz, there. She did, I think, at the height of the COVID joys, I think we did about 200 vaccines, COVID vaccines in our centre, and we're about to start, obviously, doing that again. We get physios in from MMU. We have opticians come on site. Digital access and bank accounts are all part of what we offer. But for us, what underpins everything that we do is prayer and being, we call it a God slot or a light session during the week, where we just basically we talk about Jesus. We have a session in the week that looks a little bit like this. It's a little bit smaller. And we talk about Jesus, and we offer that opportunity for the guys and girls who come through our door to explore faith. A lot of them don't have faith, don't even know maybe necessarily that we're a Christian charity, although they like the quotes on the wall. And then we go, well, you know that quote is from Jesus, or do you know that quote's from the Bible? And they're like, really? So that's a big part of what we do. We actually have a prayer space underneath our in our basement, underneath our building. And my dream is that there's always somebody praying underneath while all the practical stuff is happening upstairs. And my dream, and you can partner with me with this in my dream, is that people come in expecting a shower, come in expecting a cup of tea, but they walk out healed, restored, and in relationship with Jesus. That's my dream. And our God slot, we call it our Dwell Project, it's everything that connects with faith. We had 65 people come through our little God slot session over the year. We had 62 people who came to our mentoring sessions, and my colleague Victor, he does one-to-one mentoring with anybody who wants to talk and just chat. We couch it that it's Christian, so it will, you know, we will talk about Christian principles, but the people come because they want to listen. They want somebody to listen to them, and they get wisdom from the Lord. And then we go out on outreach, not just in Manchester City Centre, but to lots of different of the temporary accommodations around the city. They're non-Christian and generally run by either the council or other agencies in the city. And during COVID, we asked if we could go in and pray in one of the COVID hotels, as they were called. Not sure how the partnership would react to that. And they went, well, yeah, because you're Barnabas. You could do that. And we were like, oh, yeah, of course. thinking we should have asked this years ago, but we never did. So now we go into six different settings, including that eTrop hotel that I mentioned, and we saw 277 people. And those moments are really, really fascinating to me. We just go into a room, we set up, sometimes we have a guitar there, sometimes we just play some music through YouTube. We just set an atmosphere of worship and prayer, and we sit and wait and see if anybody wants to come. And as the figures tell, they do. Sometimes it's one, sometimes it's two. So we had five the other day, which is amazing. And during that time, last autumn term, we had three people give their lives to Jesus, just sitting in a room, chatting and being prayed for. How good is that? Amazing. And these are people who are off the streets, but they're still homeless. So they're still in those temporary accommodations. And then what we do, so we have, obviously, our volunteers make everything happen. So we need around 40 to 50 volunteers a week to make everything I'm describing happen. Obviously, they can be in our centre, giving out food, clothing, helping run the showers, chatting to people. We have volunteers who do triage work and help assess people as they come in. And then we go out on these outreaches, either around the city, in our centre when we do our God slot, or in the temporary accommodations, in the hotels, or the places where people are staying around the city. And you can get involved in any of that too. So if you're going to come and chat to me afterwards, then please do. We're just so blessed by the people who come. And it's a really fun dynamic. Not everybody who volunteers with us is a Christian. So we get to witness not only the people in front of us, but the people who serve alongside us. Lots of people want to make a difference in our city and don't want to see homelessness. And they're not fazed by the fact that we're a Christian charity. We don't hide that. And they want to come and be a part of it, which is really exciting. But we have specific Christian elements to that, though, where we would love any of you to come and be a part of it, specifically on our outreach and when we're doing our God slot session on the Thursday, because we want to share Jesus in those moments. But in everything we do, whether it's a cup of tea, a shower, accommodation referral, putting somebody into their own home, we believe there's an opportunity for them to meet Jesus. We don't necessarily preach every day. We don't necessarily offer prayer even every day. But we know the way we work and what we do is different to other services. And the guys and girls comment on that. And we have an opportunity to share Jesus with them. And sometimes it does look like a prayer. Sometimes it does look like dramatic things happening. But a lot of the time, it's a cup of tea. It's a conversation. It's a listening ear. And you can be a part of that too. So that's a little bit about our, sort of how we practically work, how we show up in the city as Barnabas, and we've been doing that, as I say, for over 30 years. And we've got, I could give you hours and hours of great fun stories about what God has been doing in and through Barnabas. And we worked out, because we're fundraising at the moment to try and refurb our showers, we did 15,000 showers since 2015, which is crazy, isn't it? But we worked that out and we thought, well, all those lives are getting impacted daily. And those are people who most of society don't want to hang out with, don't want to talk to, and don't want to necessarily engage with, because they're difficult. They've got all sorts going on in their lives. And it's not always smooth, let's put it like that, when we're dealing with people in that situation. So I just wanted to briefly share with you kind of the heart behind what we do. And I call this looking at Jesus as our compassionate king. He's a compassionate king. And as part of that, Jesus hung out with people who were poor, people who were vulnerable, the downtrodden, and sometimes the forgotten in society at that time when he was on the earth. So Jesus, we all acknowledge, I hope, that he's the living representation of the Father. So how Jesus deals with people is how the Father deals with people. And I've just got four little points around that to share with you this morning. Firstly, Jesus had a reputation. And it wasn't the reputation maybe that the Jews and the religious leaders of the day thought he should have. So if I look at Mark 2, if you want to look this up, from verse 13, Jesus says this. Well, it says this about Jesus. Once again, Jesus went out beside the lake. A large crowd came to him, and he began to teach them. As he walked along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," Jesus told him. And Levi got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. When the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they asked his disciples, "Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners?" On hearing this, Jesus said to them, "It's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have come to call the righteous, I've come not to call the righteous, but sinners." So Jesus didn't separate himself from the least, the lost, the unclean, the dishonest. He had proximity with them, and it offended the religious people of the day, didn't it? They didn't like it. "Why are you hanging out with these people?" And Jesus made it clear, "That's, I've come for them. That's why I'm here." You know, to the point, this was his reputation. Luke 7:34 describes Jesus as a friend of tax collectors and sinners. Yeah? So these were people who were looked down upon in society. He was seen as dishonest. He was seen as dirty, unclean. And Jesus said, "These are the people I've come for." So he had a reputation. Maybe not a reputation that people were expecting of their Messiah. Secondly, Jesus had compassion. So the dictionary would define compassion as pity or concern or to suffer with. And I believe that's all good. But I think biblical compassion, as shown by Jesus, is all that and more. So Matthew 15, it says this in verse 32. Jesus called his disciples to him and said, "I have compassion for these people. They have already been with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. I do not want to send them away hungry, or they may collapse on the way." And then what did he do? He fed 5,000 people with a miraculous multiplication of a boy's packed lunch. Yeah? So he became the answer to the problem. Matthew 9:36 says, "When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd." And then what does he do? He tells us to pray for the workers. Matthew 14:14 says, "When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and he healed their sick." He became the answer again. Jesus had compassion on them in Matthew 20:34. And what does he do? He touched their eyes. Immediately their sight received their sight and followed him. And Mark 6:34 said, "When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began to teach them many things." So yes, compassion might be pity or concern or to suffer with, but biblical compassion, the compassion that Jesus shows us, is that he became the answer to the problem that was presented and put before him. He didn't just point out the lack or the problem or, "Oh, I'm really sorry, you know, you're blind. That's sad, isn't it?" No. He healed them. He fed them. Or he taught them. Or he calls us to do the same. So Jesus became the good news, and that good news in each situation looked a bit different, but it was his compassion that drove that. Whether it was a miracle, whether it was feeding people, whether it was teaching people, that's what compassion looks like. And that's what our compassion can look like. And of course, Jesus was modeling this because we know Jesus is the representation of the Father. And actually in Exodus 34, God himself says, when he's talking to Moses, he passes in front of Moses proclaiming, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness." He describes himself as compassionate. And of course he could say that, he can say that, we know that, because he was to become the answer to all of humanity's pain, suffering, and sin by taking on flesh in Jesus and suffering his death on the cross. The ultimate act of compassion that the world has ever seen. Yeah? So Jesus had compassion. He modeled compassion. He is compassion. So Jesus had a reputation. Wasn't the reputation that people were expecting. He has compassion. He is compassion. He models compassion. And he redefined worship. I don't know whether you've thought of it in this way. I find it interesting that as Jesus discusses separating the sheep from the goats on Judgment Day, he references the good works the sheep have done for the least, the lost, and the lonely. I don't know about you, but if it's important to Jesus, I think we need to take note, don't we? It's important to us. So Matthew 25, about famous passage, the sheep and the goats, and for the sake of time, I won't read the whole thing, but I'll just highlight verse 35. In this story, Jesus says, "For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." And of course, we know the righteous are like, confused, like, when did we do this for you? When did we do that? I can't remember doing that. And Jesus, or the king, replies, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did it for me." And of course, this teaching from Jesus comes in the context of kingdom wisdom. What is important in the kingdom of heaven? How you spend your life? Are you ready for Jesus' return? Were you fruitful in your life? And how did you treat those less fortunate than yourself? And Jesus is showing us that how he treated those on the margins of society is how we should. And when we do this, he empowers us and gives us all we need in order to do it. And it's our worship to him. So we see this challenge throughout the Bible from God himself, that true worship, true fasting, or true religious acts are actually all about how we treat those less fortunate than ourselves. At Barnabas, you know, one of our key scriptures is Isaiah 58. And again, for time, I won't read the whole thing, but I'll just highlight some of the aspects of this. And God is talking to his people, and he says, "Is this not the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice, set the oppressed free, share your food with the hungry, provide the poor wanderer with shelter, or to clothe them?" And it's at this point that God says that your light will break forth like the dawn if you do these things. If you spend yourselves on behalf of the hungry, satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness and your night will become like the noonday. And this, in the context of this scripture, is a challenge, because the Lord is actually rebuking Israel, who in their religious activity are complaining that their prayers are not being answered. And the reason the Lord tells them is because they're not looking after the poor. They're doing whatever they want. They're having a fast. They might be doing what they consider to be good worship. But then they're exploiting their workers. Their fasting ends in quarreling and strife. And they fight. And they don't humble themselves. So God is rebuking them and saying, if you did all these other things, if you looked after the poor, your true worship would actually be getting rid of injustice. True worship would actually be clothing somebody who's naked. True worship would actually be feeding the hungry. It's a challenge, isn't it? And we know when Jesus was on the earth, he challenged the Pharisees, the religious elite of the day, and he called them out for their lack of justice. He called them whitewashed tombs because their worship had become twisted and they didn't look after the poor. Matthew 23, Jesus says this, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You give a tenth of your spices mint, dill, and cumin, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. It's a challenge. Every time I read that, I'm challenged by that. It's clear that how we treat those who are poor and marginalised is a key to kingdom advancement, both for us, our society, and our city. I believe that when we do these things, Jesus himself is present, and it's our true worship for him. Just as Jesus models the Father, so as we do this, we're modelling our Heavenly Father to the world around us. We often joke in our support centre that we're like mums and dads to the guys and girls that walk through our door, because they've not experienced a healthy mum and dad for most of them. And sometimes the guys will kick off with me, and then sometimes they're nice to me and they kick off with my female colleague, and we look at each other and go, we're being mum and dad in this moment, aren't we? What's going on here? But it's actually in those moments that we find the ones who kick off the most come back, even though we might tell them, you know, you can't do that in here, you need to leave today, and we do say that, they often are the ones who will come back and they'll apologise and we try again. Because they want to know. They want what we've got. They want Jesus. They might not say that, but that's what they want. And it's in those moments, and we see this day in, day out, that we feel, and we can feel God's presence in that place. They sometimes comment to us, it feels really peaceful in here. And you're like, yeah, we know. But they don't know why, but we do. And we get reports as well, because we work with all the other services in the city. We have the same clients going to different places. We hear about their terrible behaviour or how scary they are in other places. And we're like, oh, they're not like that with us. We get good connection with them, because we know Jesus is in our conversations and he's helping us through that. So Jesus had a reputation, wasn't one necessarily that everybody was expecting. He defined compassion and he redefined worship. And my final point.
Ooh. It stopped working.
Oh.
There we go.
Jesus is healthy. In our day-to-day work at Barnabas, it's really complex. We meet people all the time who are obviously less fortunate than ourselves, have got deep mental health issues, conspiracy theories, maybe mired in addiction. Sometimes they get violent, they get aggressive. But we are for them. We want to bring them hope. But we need to stay healthy, because all of that, what I've just listed, can overwhelm you. And it can become, oh, how do I cope? How do I do this? So I believe, and I think Jesus models this, that in order to be a compassionate people, we need to be a boundaried people, have healthy boundaries. We don't just, at Barnabas, we don't just give everything out. We believe in lifting people out of poverty. If you just give everything that the guys ask us for, they'll never change. And they'll never make that, they'll never have that motivation to shift into a different lifestyle. You know, it's the classic phrase, isn't it? Give a man a fish or teach him how to fish. And we're all about that. We want to teach people how to make a change, be different. And sometimes it's as simple as no. A no at Barnabas can be so powerful for the guys and girls that we're working with to learn how to receive a no. And I don't know whether you've realised this, but probably all of you can take a no. You might not like it. You might not agree with it, but you can probably cope with it. But for the guys and girls that we work with, when they hear the word no, it often equals in their heads abuse. You're letting me down again, just like the system's let me down. Oh, you're going to hurt me. Oh, I hate that. And sometimes, you know, that can be as simple as we have a limit. We say you can have one new clothing item when you come in for your shower. And some of them might say, oh, I want 6 pairs of boxer shorts. I'm like, no, you can have one. You can come back tomorrow and we'll give you another one, but just have one today. And sometimes we get a kick-off in that moment. And I often say to them, if you're shouting at me for a pair of boxer shorts, how are you going to get on when you're talking to DWP down the phone for your benefits? Are you going to start shouting at them? Because they're going to hang up on you. They ain't going to listen. And you won't get your money. And they'll kind of look at you and go, oh, yeah. So maybe don't shout at me. And obviously we're trying to de-escalate this all the time. So kindness in our world can look like no, which can be a challenge. And sometimes it's not; they can't even come through our door because they're either too under the influence. Unfortunately, we've got some steps. So, you know, if you can't get up the steps, you can't get in the building. But equally, sometimes they don't want to change. And we bring a challenge in Barnabas. We say, if you're coming in, we're going to do something today. Even if it's just seeing the nurse, even if it's seeing the mental health worker, even if it's sitting down and getting your details in the system so we can start your benefit claim, we're going to do something. If you just want a sandwich or you just want a shower, we're probably not the service for you. We're after change. And it's working, that, and people are engaging, as those figures showed you earlier. But Jesus only did what he saw the Father doing. Jesus had boundaries. You know, there were often times where he was surrounded by crowds of people, but he focused in on one person and he healed them. Sometimes he said no, that if you clock that, but particularly when the religious leaders or those around him demanded a miraculous sign, he said, no, I'm not doing that. Then the disciples, Peter and John at the beautiful gate, they don't have money to give to the beggar, but they offer prayer. So yes, in our world, you know, we're often aware that we might get manipulated, we might get used, almost certainly will happen, but we know that we trust Jesus, and we do say no, and we do hold our line, and we do have boundaries that we don't want crossed, maybe for our safety, maybe for the safety of the people we're working with, and no is a powerful tool, surprisingly powerful tool, in our world to sort of help people move forward. So that's how we stay healthy, and I'd encourage you in that we can do that. So, Jesus, our compassionate King, he had a reputation for hanging out with sinners and people who maybe are on the margins of society. Do we? Do you? Do I? He had compassion. His compassion looked like becoming the very answer to the needs that were being presented. Are we part of the answer? Is my life part of the answer to society's problems that we see around? Or do we point out the problems but leave it there? I don't know. That's a challenge, isn't it? His priority, Jesus' priority, was for those in need. Is that our priority? And Jesus is compassionate to us. The ultimate act of compassion was on the cross. And it's good to remind ourselves today of that with communion. But Jesus is our perfect example, and he will empower us and equip us for this lifestyle of compassion. It's our heart of Barnabas that we live out that daily, that our work that we do, the practical outworking of this, is reflecting what Jesus' compassion looked like. Sometimes it's challenging, well, a lot of the time it's challenging. Sometimes it's very practical. Sometimes we lay hands on somebody and they get healed of cancer, which has happened in our centre before now. Sometimes people get saved. Sometimes we're arguing with the city council about somebody's provision. And even this week, we had to battle to get somebody who was, we identified who was in modern slavery. We had to battle to get the police involved. We battled to get him off the streets. And we battled to get him into the right support, which hopefully tomorrow will get moved into the system that helps people in that situation. So sometimes it looks like advocacy for us. But it will look different for all of us. Your lives, your compassion might be for your neighbours, might be for your work colleagues, might be for people you go to school with, college with, university with, whatever. But I just pray. Should we pray right now? Is that okay? So Jesus, I thank you that you are a perfect example of what it looks like to bring your compassion to the world, this broken world around us. And I pray this morning that you would open our eyes to the needs, but that we wouldn't get overwhelmed. I pray, Lord, that you would open our eyes to opportunities to serve, to worship you through bringing an end to injustice, through helping those who are poor, and helping those who are struggling with their health or their mental health or whatever. Lord, I pray that you would give us, Lord, your strength, your leading, and by your Spirit, I pray for everybody in this room and in earshot, Lord, that we would partner with you to see your kingdom come in our society, in our sphere of influence. And Lord, whether that looks like helping Barnabas, whether that looks like helping somewhere locally here, Lord, I pray that you would open our eyes to what you want us to do. In Jesus' name. Amen.